Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 280, recorded January 11th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. Or I could say, you, hello.
There you go. That's better.
That's a good one. Welcome to the not quite 100-acre living room.
Yeah, not even close to a 100-acre living room. Okay.
That would be a ridiculously big living room, and I would not want to vacuum it.
So we had some news.
Yes, we got to do something kind of fun. We were on the other end of getting interviewed.
Yeah, we were interviewed on a podcast, which is something we haven't done in a while. And it was the American Variety Network, the fish keeping podcast within the American Variety Network. And it was Alex Cardinale, I think is how it's pronounced.
Yeah, it'd be Cardinale in Italian, but I think they say it the American way. Yes, it's Cardinale.
So that was fun show to do. And
we put it up on the Facebook page, right? The link. So if you missed it or you haven't seen it, you can go to the Facebook page and get that. Do we have a link on the website also?
We will. Once this podcast itself that we're recording now is up.
Very good.
I'll put a link to it there as well. So check it out. He does, Alex does various types of shows.
He's got various different, or several different subjects.
Yes, and one of them is a fish keeping podcast that he does. So you can check it out. And let's see, who have we got this week?
We have Scott from someplace that we don't know.
You know, Scott has told us, because Scott has...
Has he?
Yeah, he's contributed before. I remember that. I remember his last name. He's participated on a number of occasions. I just can't remember where he's from, and it doesn't say on his Facebook page.
Maybe he's from Gallifrey, then. He just moves around a lot. We'll just say Scott from Gallifrey.
Okay.
I hope he doesn't mind.
Probably not. And who else?
Juliet in Paris, France. And somebody from Twitter, so we don't know their actual name, but they're a pathologist in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah.
So
let's dig in.
Okay. Let's do Scott first. Says, hi, Russ and Kelly. I listened to your podcast with Diana Wallstad way back when and have been fascinated by the idea of the Wallstad method ever since. Today, I finally decided it was time to give it a try. After additional research, I set up a 10-gallon tank in the window. I put...
Everything disappeared. That was weird.
The device crashed with my notes. Okay, uncrashed. I put between 1 and 1.5 inches of organic potting soil down after removing as much rock and sticks as possible. Then I added just enough water to let it rise above the surface of the soil and let it sit for a couple of hours. I then siphoned out the water, hoping this might allow for something of a rinse, and added Seachem fluorite. It's now full of water and, no surprise, ammonia. I'm anxious to see how long it takes for this setup to cycle. I'm not planning on using a filter, but purchased a small Eheim surface skimmer I plan to run intermittently to avoid the surface film and bacteria issues you discussed. Once cycled, I will add Phoenix reservoirs and a variety of shrimp. I'm excited to try something totally different and welcome any advice that may aid in my success.
Hmm. That sounds like a fun project. That's, glad you enjoyed that episode and glad you're trying it out. Let's see. When I think about this, I would say I would ask what light source you're using in addition to the window. A lot of times... Diana Wallstad advocates window light, but also, you know, not too strong, but fairly strong window light, but also some overhead fluorescent lighting, but just not very strong, so that you're getting kind of a combination of both sometimes. Mm-hmm. Can be a good way to do it. I would say, if it were me, I might consider leaving the surface skimmer on all the time, as using it intermittently can be a good way to get rid of surface scum and so on, but it might not, when you turn it on and then turn it off, depending on how frequently you do that, you can change the oxygen levels and that could upset certain things, bacteria and so on. If it's just moving the water a little bit and it's not agitating the surface so much, it's just skimming it, you probably won't be affecting the CO2 that's coming from the bottom layer and the decomposition there too much. And so I would probably just consider at least leaving it on all the time. I know that, if I remember correctly, at least, that Diana Wahlstatt does that on occasion with... She'll just have a small power head to keep water flowing. She doesn't use filtration, really, but she'll do something like that to keep water flowing. So might be something to think about doing. Let's see. Everything else so far looks pretty good. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I can think of. Well, not at the moment, but if anybody else who's done a lot with the Wahlstatt method would like to chip in there, pitch in and say something about what might help Scott out, you're welcome to do so. And we wish you the best of luck.
Yep.
Let us know how it goes.
And you can tell us again where you're from and we'll try to remember this time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Juliet in France. She says, hello, Russ and Kelly. 30-liter nano update. My red cherries were dying off again. So I got 5 rasboras. Mara's sold as Brigitte. Oh, well, I didn't have my glasses in the shop, and those guys are small. I then got an explosion of detritus worms. So I got 4 pygmy corys. I bought a betta in a fit of sentimentality, feeling very sorry for the poor little guy in the shop. I know. While preparing his tank, I smashed it, so he ended up in the rasbora nano. Oh no, no quarantine. I had just done a rather big water change after dosing the tank with worm medicine. The next day, 3 rasbora were dead. The last 2 were hiding in the floating pants and will no longer come out. Did the beta get them? He doesn't seem to chase anything, doesn't bother the ram's horns, and just goes down to stare at the shrimp from time to time. He never touches the corys and mainly just steals their sunken pellets. Or was it the medication and big water change? The water was colder than I would have liked. Can I add a few more rasboras and will this make the shy ones come back out? Or are they scared of the betta and therefore all the new ones will hide too? Pygmy corys are great little fish, super active and not only swimming at the bottom but all over the place. But they and the rasboras have the smallest mouths. They will not touch tube effects or brine shrimp except for the smallest of fragments, but devour pellets. The rasboras each powdered flake.
Eat powdered flake.
Oh, that's a typo. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rasboras eat powdered flake. I can't get a hold of any microworms. Any suggestion to broaden their diets? The beta has 2 very small white tufts on 2 of his fin spikes. What do I bet you? It's a fungus. The only time I didn't quarantine. How can I treat this when I cannot use meds in the shrimp tank, in the shrimp and snail tank, and having smashed the only spare tank I had? Salt baths? Can I do this to a beta? And if yes, how? How much salt, etc.? I find nanos very trying. This one is slightly overstocked, perhaps, though most inmates are tiny, but even my emptier ones had more casualties than they should have had. I can't wait to make room for a bigger tank. In the meanwhile, any help with the above would be most appreciated. Okay, let's go up and start at the top, huh?
Okay. So first question was, did the beta get them? Well, I sent a follow-up email to Juliet to see what I could find out, and it's difficult to say whether the beta got them or not, but probably not, because it was hard to tell, but it didn't seem like there were any marks of damage or trauma to their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a water change, possibly. Can stress them out. I once lost a bunch of cardinal tetras to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's difficult to tell. I'm kind of expecting it might have been the medication and or the water change. But probably the water change. And it's possible that adding rasboras will make the shy ones come back out, but I think a fish as big as a betta could very well stress them out at best and eventually eat them. It sounds like he probably didn't kill them, but I'm not saying he couldn't have, and I'm also not saying that he wouldn't in the future. It seems likely that he will probably decide to attack them at some point, so I probably wouldn't put more in. Alright. So, oh yeah, then the pygmy corys. I do like those, and they do swim all over the place, which is a nice touch. You're saying... you asked about food for the rasboras. Anything to broaden their diets? Well, if you can't get hold of microworms, which are a great thing for little rasboras, you might try just hatching some of your own brine shrimp. Newly hatched brine shrimp would probably be perfect for them. And if you can't do that, I don't know if it's possible to get hold of Daphnia where you are. Sometimes you can put in adult Daphnia that are about to release babies, and most of them are most of the time. Put them in and they'll survive in the tank for a couple of days. Well, not with the betta. But if you end up moving the betta, you could put them in there, and then when they release the babies, the reservoirs can go after the babies. So that's a possibility. But baby brine shrimp that you hatch yourself would also be great. I asked Juliet about the salt baths. We talked about that a little bit. And I was saying probably the salt bath wouldn't help if it's a fungus, because although salt can be effective against fungus, at the concentrations that a betta can tolerate it, it isn't really. And I cited an article at Wet Web Media, which I'll put up on the page. It's called Salt Use Fresh Water. So anyway, check that out if you want to. And it talks about that and how the salt probably wouldn't help too much. And I believe then she sent another email responding to me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. She says, hello, and by the way, a very happy new year to both you and your lovely family. Thank you very much. You're same to you. The reservoirs looked a little subdued before, not very mobile, and then they were dead the next morning and the day after. No big marks of tears, but then again, they are very small, and when all pale and, well, dead, there's not much to see. It was hard to tell if it was a reaction to the water or to the arrival of a big male betta. They had been doing very well until then, getting very bright colors and being very active. I would say, regarding water temperature, that the tank water was about 26 degrees Celsius, and the arriving water maybe 20. I did pour it slowly and over my spread out hand so that it would not arrive in one big splosh in the area. Corey's loved it. I exaggerated about the 50%. It was probably closer to a quarter of the tank, but that's pretty big, especially in a nano. I just don't think it was the meds, as the remaining shrimp and snails are all thriving and very healthy, and I would have expected the shrimp to kick up their heels before anything else.
That is a good point. So it's you know, it's kind of hard to tell what happened, really.
Says, I do have two very small nano tank heaters, but though they are very good brands with thermostats, they overheat, and nothing I have is big enough to be safe.
Because I had asked her before that if she had heaters that she could set up a quarantine tank with, maybe like a plastic storage container, with the betta temporarily. So she's responding to that.
She says, I rescued the betta because I had a small tank running with a matured sponge filter full of waterlogged bogwood and Java moss. I always try to have a tank with a fully functioning filter and good quality water, just in case. Pity I broke it. That's quite a few months of patience down the drain.
True, that is sad.
That is why I asked about salt baths. Maybe they are not really that effective. Is salt harder on soft water animals, or am I completely wrong? And that was the article that...
Yeah, I sent that article in. And the thing about soft water and salt, I guess, is, as I understand it, that soft water animals are usually not accustomed to salt, and the salt itself, sodium chloride, does not make water harder. Marine salt does, and also water that tends to be high in sodium chloride often tends to be high in other minerals that do make it hard in nature, and so soft water fish tend not to be very tolerant to salty water any more than they are tolerant to very hard water. And so they coincide a lot in nature, and they don't necessarily do that if you just add salt to your tank, but they tend not to be tolerant of it because they haven't environmentally encountered it. Hopefully that makes sense.
Okay. So I think that's it for Juliet, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So good luck. And we'll go to the pathologist in Baltimore from Twitter, and he just says, do you have a good recommendation of an aquatic snail species that reproduces fast for food as for a musk turtle?
And then he had another question.
And then he says, what about shrimp? Not really for food for the turtle, but more of a temporary organism in the 55-gallon tank. Cherry shrimps?
And I suggested that he try the Physa snails, Physa, a genus name. Those snails tend to reproduce quickly. They stay small. They have fairly soft shells. Not soft, but they're not thick shells like some other snails, like Malaysian trumpet snails. And so a turtle can get through them pretty well. I used to feed those to one of my turtles years ago. And so that was my suggestion. They're kind of the football-shaped, smaller snails that you find. And then with the shrimp, I thought his idea of cherry shrimp would probably work fairly well. And you could also do ghost shrimp. The only thing with ghost shrimp, I guess, would be you'd want to quarantine them for a fair bit. Because they often are kept in fairly poor conditions in the store. Cherry shrimp are usually treated a little better. So, but either one would work, I think. And not that you wouldn't possibly have some issues with the turtle trying to eat them, but he might well do so. But in general, if you're doing that as a temporary organism in the tank, they should work fine.
Okay.
As long as the tank is nicely cycled first.
So, is that everything for tonight?
I believe so. Well, wait, one more thing. I did put on the Facebook page our crested gecko, our newer one, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a while that we had talked about it some episodes ago, but hadn't actually posted him. So I have now done so.
Oh, you put pictures up?
He's on
up?
The Facebook page, okay. And he's on...
he's a pretty boy.
I can put him on the show page, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So, there you go. You can check it out.
Very good.
And... So until next time...
May the fish...
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.